We're able to assemble here once again on this, the Lord's Day, to worship Him in spirit and in truth, and to study from this holy word, whereby we might grow and develop into mature Christians. I'd ask that you keep me and my mother in prayer. We'll be headed up to Kentucky pretty soon here. Point of fact, I will be starting a gospel meeting next Sunday. And so I would ask that you remember that and be praying that we might see good attendance and good numbers from the community. I know that my brother and others there at that congregation in Franklin, Kentucky, they have already even gone door to door in a number of cases to spread word about that meeting effort. And so we're very hopeful that we can have good and honest hearts that will be present, ready and receptive to hear the truth from the Bible preached. It's my understanding that Jeff, our newer member here, will be filling in for me this next Sunday. Appreciate him for that. I want to talk for a few moments this evening about the healing of Naaman. The healing of Naaman. His story is found in 2 Kings chapter 5. And we're going to be sharing some observations about this incident. So please locate 2 Kings chapter 5. And we are going to read from there in just a moment. We're looking back at about the year 850 BC in Palestine. To understand properly this story of Naaman, I do believe that we have to transport ourselves back in time a very long, long time ago here to 850 BC. And this is roughly 80 years since the kingdom of God's people had been pulled asunder between the north and the south. Even as in our country, we fought a civil war between the north and the south. Except the issues are different here that polarized people and put them at odds. And also, too, in our case, the union was maintained in the aftermath of the civil war. But here, with God's people, the union stayed dissolved. It stayed dissolved there with the Jews. The South fared better morally and politically. And the North was teetering on the brink of complete collapse and ruin because of sin and idolatry and gross immorality. There were a series of wicked rulers who pulled the country into lower depths of disgrace still. God sent two men to turn the hearts of the people back to Him there in the north. Two of the most famous and most familiar prophets, Elijah and his successor Elisha. Yet such was the case that even with these two men and their ministry, the tide of digression could not be fully stayed or stopped, only checked at certain moments in history. The wheels appeared to be set in motion that would roll this country off the cliff. The Lord had already promised through Moses that if His people were to depart from Him, He would raise up adversaries against them, even as we're going to find here in 2 Kings chapter 5. And He did that here in this context with a group of people known as the Syrians. The Syrians. Not to be confused with the Assyrians, a ruthless warring kingdom who rose to prominence after this period here, and the people to whom Jonah had preached to. But we're looking here at the Syrians. The Syrians. And the Bible tells us that the Lord began to cut off parts of Israel at this time. The Syrians were coming in and planting a flag to claim real estate, claim different parts of the north up there. And the north was getting smaller and smaller and smaller until ultimately they would be carried away captive by the later Assyrians there. Well, let's take a look here. I hope you have found 2 Kings chapter 5. We're going to go ahead and start thusly. This is a lengthy read, but I want to go through the entirety of it. The Bible tells us here in 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 1, "Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but a leper. And the Syrians had gone out on raids and had brought back captive a young girl from the land of Israel. She waited on Naaman's wife. Then she said to her mistress, 'If only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy.' And Naaman went in and told his master, saying, 'Thus and thus said the girl who is from the land of Israel.' Then the king of Syria said, 'Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel.' So he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. Then he brought the letter to the king of Israel, which said, 'Now be advised, when this letter comes to you, that I have sent Naaman, my servant, to you, that you may heal him of his leprosy.' And it happened, when the king of Israel read the letter, that he tore his clothes and said, 'Am I God to kill and make alive, that this man sends a man to me to heal him of his leprosy? Therefore, please consider and see how he seeks a quarrel with me.' So it was, when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent to the king, saying, 'Why have you torn your clothes? Please let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel.' Then Naaman went with his horses and chariot, and he stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, 'Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean.' But Naaman became furious and went away and said, 'Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. Are not the Abana and the Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?' So he turned and went away in a rage. And his servants came near and spoke to him and said, 'My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean?' So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his aides, and came and stood before him, and he said, 'Indeed, now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. Now therefore, please take a gift from your servant.' But he said, 'As the Lord lives, before whom I stand, I will receive nothing.' And he urged him to take it, but he refused. So Naaman said, 'Then if not, please let your servant be given 2 mule loads of earth, For your servant will no longer offer either burnt offering or sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord. A very powerful story. And there are a number of lessons that we can learn and apply from various individuals here. There is the servant girl. There is her mistress, Naaman's wife. There is Elisha. There is Naaman. There is the king of Syria, Naaman's king. And there is the king of Israel, Elisha's king. And as we look here at this servant girl, I do believe we learn a great lesson on the theme of love and compassion. How easy it might have been for this young girl to be bitter against her captors. After all, she had been taken from her own land. She had been whisked away from her own people, apparently removed from her own family, and placed in a position of servitude toward the very one responsible for turning her world upside down. She gets to tend to Naaman, particularly to Naaman's wife, pick up after her, bring things to her, run errands for her, make her look pretty, make her feel comfortable. She was a slave girl. How easy it might be to foster resentment and allow that to turn to seething hatred and then perhaps to seek revenge. But there is no indication here that she's plotting an escape, or that she's planning an assassination, or that she's trying to be difficult or uncooperative and unruly. To the contrary, when it turns out that Naaman has the debilitating, body-deforming condition of leprosy, she doesn't patiently just wait for it to do him in. She informs him. She tells Naaman's wife, who in turn shares the news with him, of one who happens to be able to remedy this great problem. You see, my friends, she was the very living embodiment of the golden rule. Whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Matthew 7, verse 12. She knew how to turn the other cheek. She knew how to love her enemies and bless those who cursed her. She knew how to play the role of the Good Samaritan hundreds and hundreds of years even before Jesus gave that parable. My neighbor is anyone who has need. Naaman has a need. He is therefore my neighbor, and I'm going to try and take care of him. I believe that she lived out what the Apostle Paul would later say in Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12, and there starting with verse 17. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Do we not see this little attendant girl present within those verses right there? She is caring for her captor, merciful toward her master, humane toward her holder. You know, whatever opinion Naaman may have had of the Israelite people, the image of the Israelite people could only be helped by the actions of this young girl. And how many wars, how many arguments, How many domestic problems, how many divorces would have been avoided if only the parties involved had the godly spirit of this Israelite maiden? How many friendships and families would still be intact? I see unmistakably in the first place a powerful lesson on love from this little girl. Secondly, I believe we learn a lesson from Naaman on what to do with good news. What to do with great and fantastic news. It did not take long for Naaman and his king to act on the statement here of this servant girl. Months or years did not fly by. It became a focused quest. It became a top priority. It became an immediate mission. Time was of the essence. They truly seized the day. Like a man with terminal cancer who learns of a doctor or surgeon with an experimental procedure that is guaranteed to work. So they move. Naaman did not want to sit idly while this disease destroyed him. The king of Syria did not want to lose so successful a general and friend. And so you see here that they move with great haste. There in verse number 4, 2 Kings 5, verse 4. Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus said the girl who is from the land of Israel." Then the king of Syria said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So he departed and took with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. They do not come empty-handed, but lavish gifts are waiting in the wings. For what price tag could one put on life or the quality of life? They are prepared to afford this treatment and procedure at whatever the exorbitant cost. This was an outrageous amount in ancient times that they were packing with them. But they move with great speed. Quick action reminds us of many in the first century who had heard of the miracles of Jesus and sought to tap into that and sought to benefit from those life-altering wonders. The Gospels record a string or series of healings and help to the hurting and the spread of the word that was associated with that. In Luke's Gospel, many magnificent, marvelous miracles are performed immediately after the Lord's return from His temptation in the wilderness. And we read in Luke chapter 4 and in verse 14, "Then Jesus returned in the power of the Spirit to Galilee, and news of him went out through all the surrounding region. At Capernaum, he cures a man of an unclean spirit, and the witnesses rattle off the report far and wide." Luke 4, verse 37, "And the report about him went out into every place in the surrounding region." They weren't sitting around like bumps on a log. The Lord heals Peter's mother-in-law. How appreciative Peter and his wife would be for that. And the mother-in-law too. And then you find that long into the evening, people just keep pouring in. Luke 4, verse 40. You see that right there? "When the sun was setting, all those who had any that were sick with various diseases brought them to him, and he laid his hands on every one of them and healed them." They are clamoring to him. Curiously, you discover in Luke chapter 5, the Lord healing of all people, a man not unlike Naaman, a man who was a leper. Watch this here in Luke chapter 5, verse 12. "And it happened, when he was in a certain city, that behold, a man who was full of leprosy saw Jesus, and he fell on his face and implored him, saying, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Question, how did he know? How was he so sure of that? How did he know that Jesus had power to heal him? Word had spread. And potentially, he had even seen his fellow outcasts cured. You find that the masses did not muzzle the message. And while the Lord seems to want this momentum to slow down, it just continues on at a breakneck speed or pace there. It says that, look, he charged him to tell no one, verse 14, but go and show yourself to the priest. Verse 15, however, the report went around concerning him all the more, and great multitudes came together to hear and to be healed by him of their infirmities. The folks back then even resorted to drastic and desperate means. A man is let down through a roof there in the following verses. You think about how challenging that would be. First, you got to hoist them up. He's paralyzed, so he's powerless to do this himself. Then you have to make a hole in the roof. You've got to use those ropes then to lower him down slowly, making sure that he does not fall in the process. Easier said than done. But these people knew they were sick. And they knew just how sick they were. And they knew who could heal them. They went to the correct source. As Naaman, they went to the healer. But Jesus provides spiritual healing, not just physical healing. Now, one would think that everyone would want to hear and respond favorably to the good news. But truth be told, the vast majority seem to resent being convicted of their sin. You find here in Luke chapter 4, Luke 4, verse 27, that the Lord makes application. And he calls out some of his own natives right here, here at Nazareth. And many lepers were in Israel in the time of Elisha the prophet, and none of them was cleansed except Naaman the Syrian. So all those in the synagogue, when they heard these things, were filled with wrath and rose up and thrust him out of the city, and they led him to the brow of the hill on which their city was built, that they might throw him down over the cliff. Then passing through the midst of them, he went his way. The point was that they did not like the message, so they wanted to get rid of the messenger. And Jesus was stressing this fundamental truth, that often it happens to be the outsiders, the people that we least expect, who know how to get help and who know how to go to the right source and to comply with the conditions. Now, what about us? Jesus is our only hope for the greatest problem that we face, the problem of our sin. What are we to do with the good news? We're going to have to seek him, not seek to destroy him as the Nazarenes who thought to throw him overboard a cliff. May we seek to bring others to him so that they can have cleansing as well. In the third place, how about a lesson right here? A lesson from Elisha on doing all to the glory of God. I find this very compelling here. And a little ironic that here you happen to have a young girl who could not have had many years in this world, who demonstrated tremendous faith. Why, she knew about Elisha, this great man of God. But the king of Israel, the most powerful man among God's people, who should have known all of his subjects, and especially the prophet Elisha, why, he demonstrates what kind of faith? A rather weak faith. Little faith, doesn't he? Take a look at this here once more. Verse 7. And it happened when the king of Israel read the letter that he tore his clothes and said, "Am I God to kill and make alive, that this man sends a man to me to heal him of his leprosy? Who does he think I am? Surely this has to be an entrapment. He's up to something here. Why, he's asking me to do the impossible. And when I cannot do what is impossible, then he's going to get angry at me and make our condition as a people far worse. Our condition as a subjugated and threatened people far worse." Well, Elisha steps in. There in verse number 8. When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, he's basically asking here, what's the big deal now? You let him come to me, and he shall know what? Verse 8 here at the end. He shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. It's phrased in such a way to show forth that Elisha is drawing attention to the great power of God Almighty. Because a prophet was one who was the mouthpiece of God Almighty. And so Elisha effectively says right here that God is still speaking in this area. God still has a voice. The king of Israel may have been nearly ignorant of it or stubborn in admitting it, but that voice was there. And these foreigners, these Gentiles, Naaman and his king would certainly learn of it. Now watch that closely. It's not, "I will heal him." It's not, "He will know that I can heal him." But he will know that there is a prophet in Israel, a spokesman for God here. He appealed to God and the power of God. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 31, "Do all to the glory of God." Young David understood this principle in 1 Samuel chapter 17 when he told that mighty, massive giant, that imposing figure, that foreboding figure, Goliath, who sent everyone else scurrying away like frightened little squirrels dashing up the trees. In 1 Samuel 17, he said, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." Did David believe in giving credit to the Almighty? Absolutely he did. And there you find in 1 Samuel 17, in verse number 46, right there as you get to the end of that verse, to paraphrase, he's saying, "Goliath, you and all our enemies will be destroyed, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." Verse 47, "Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's." In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus explained, Matthew 5, verse 16, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify" who? Glorify you? No. Glorify your Father who is in heaven. Do we rise and shine and give God the glory, glory, as we teach the little children in song? I think about a trip I made out to Sierra Leone there in West Africa. A native out there, John Cardbo, who preaches at the Wellington Church of Christ, had been a Pentecostal preacher formerly at a Pentecostal church. And he learned the truth and was converted. And by the grace of God, he successfully taught all in the congregation, and they were converted as well. In Sierra Leone, they had a very bloody civil war that lasted a long time. He lost everything in that war. His house had been burned down. And he made it out with just the shirt on his back and the breeches on his legs. And I can remember a conversation with him about that. He had also helped a lot of people who are alive today. People he helped out of the burning flames. I said, that is just amazing. That's incredible that you could do all of that. He said, no. By the grace of God. Only by the grace of God. He was always deflecting attention away from himself and putting it where it belonged, with Jehovah, who holds our breath in his hand. Number four, and last. We learned this lesson from studying Naaman. And that is that truth is not always what we expect it to be. Now, is that not one of the most foundational lessons of Naaman's story? Naaman declared in the now famous words that have echoed down the ages and through the tunnels of time, Behold, I thought, as it is phrased in the old King James Version there in verse number 11 in 2 Kings 5. Before he ever arrived at the house of Elisha or heard what Elisha would say, Naaman thought he knew how all of this was supposed to unfold. But Naaman was wrong. You see, it wasn't that God could not have cured him in the manner that he personally imagined, but God's ways were not his ways, and God's thoughts were not his thoughts. That's just the plain truth. Well, he felt he knew how it was supposed to go down, even to the very formula itself. Did you catch this here? Now watch this. Let's get the whole picture. Verse number 9. Naaman went with his horses and chariot, and he stood at the door of Elisha's house. And Elisha sent a messenger to him, saying, Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean. But Naaman became furious and went away and said, Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me, and he will do some abracadabra here. And it's going to be all better, all fine, and I can go my merry way. And when he hears that of all things, he has to dip in the Jordan River, you can just see the contempt that he has for the Jewish people seething here from his lips. You mean I've got to go to that puny, pathetic river over there? I've traveled, to put this here in our layman's terms, he's saying, I have traveled a good deal, a good distance to be present. And if you were to look at a map here, now, if let's just say he lived within Damascus, the capital there of Syria, he references Damascus. It was a journey of about 100 miles. I come all the way out here. And let me ask you now, does Elisha meet him there at the door? No, he doesn't. Not at all. He sends a servant to go and talk with him. You can see how Naaman is just completely insulted by all of this. Why, in his mind, he's thinking, look, I am the great and honorable man. I am the commander of a mighty army. I have come with all of these riches in tow. And you're not going to have the decency to come and meet me here at this door. I'm out of here. I'm done with this. Now, if he had reasoned that way, would he have been cured of his leprosy? Not at all. What you see here is that Elisha is serving him up a healthy slice, a healthy serving of humble pie. Here this man had to swallow some pride. Now, preconceived and erroneous thoughts all too easily get people in trouble. Naaman is not the only one to have made that mistake. The vast majority of all who have ever lived or who will ever live and are living right now have made that same error of assuming that they know the mind of God apart from the revelation of His Word. And what stands out to me is the great admission and confession of the Apostle Paul, his heart cry. You can just picture the tears welling up in his eyes as he writes this in Romans chapter 10. Romans chapter 10, verse 1. Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they may be saved. For I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted to what? Have not submitted to the righteousness of God. God has a plan of salvation. And it may not be your plan of salvation, but it is the only plan of salvation. We come to God on His terms, or we come not at all. Naaman had to learn that lesson. He threw a hissy fit. He goes away in a rage just briefly, but fortunately, he does cool his jets. His aides talk some sense into him. Look, you know, if it had been very challenging, wouldn't you have done it? I mean, if he asked you to do 25 jumping jacks, or to rub your belly and pat your head, or to read Little House on the Prairie, that might be challenging for a soldier to do. Wouldn't you have done it? Sure, he would have. So how much more when he just says, wash and be cleansed? Get down off your high horse. They had courage to tell him that. Thankfully, he listened. It's not as though the water alone, the H2O alone, saved him. Let's be clear about that. What saved Naaman? It was his obedience. And how do I know about this? Jesus told us what? Jesus said that there were many lepers in Israel. Not a few, but many. Many in the days of Elisha. But only one here will you read about being cleansed. And that's Naaman. And that tells you that even though others may have heard about the healing of Naaman and just came rushing and charging to the Jordan River to do a cannonball or to do a nosedive and just fling themselves into the waters, dipping even seven times, guess what? They would still have that leprosy hugging their skin. So it was not in the water alone. Great grace had been shown here to Naaman, but he had to take advantage of the means of benefiting from it and receiving the free gift. And I do not believe that it's as though he would have started to see his skin improving with each successive time that he went under the waters there. It's not as though somehow after the third or the fourth time he could tell that it was evaporating, just spilling off and dissipating into the water. No, the sixth time he came up, he still would have been every bit a leper. Seven was the number that God had dialed in, that God had called out. And after seven dips, he had skin as pure, fresh, and whole and healthy as that of a baby. Some of the years had washed away, hadn't they? At that moment, maybe he did feel a little like forever young. We have to learn to trust God even when it does not make sense to us personally. For this just did not make sense to Naaman. And if Naaman had reasoned, look, you know, this is just too far out there, and I haven't been received too properly here, he would have lived and died a leper. There is an antitype which now saves us, baptism. We're going to have to obey the gospel of Christ. It's that act of submitting to the will of God that is going to save us. Now, Naaman does all of this, and he is cleansed. And Naaman recognized that the God of Israel was the only true God as he was healed and cured. What would be the value of the silver and gold and the clothing? Let me give you this for a perspective. Amaziah hired 100,000 valiant warriors for 100 talents of silver. Naaman had 10 talents, so perhaps that was enough to pay off 10,000 military personnel. That's still a lot of people. 10,000. David purchased the threshing floor of Arunah for 600 shekels of gold. And the amount of gold here is 10 times David's amount. And these clothes would have been clothes fit for wealthy rulers. That's all that Naaman would have had in his wardrobe anyway. You've heard of that program, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Instant millionaire right here. So question of questions. Why does Elisha not accept this gift? A person who was not as disciplined as Elisha would say that, look, hey, you're a fool. Why don't you just go ahead and take the money and put a lid on it? And look at all the good that you could do with that money. Elisha had appealed to the living God. Elisha had not done this for his own glory. Naaman had God to thank, not Elisha. And Elisha wanted this great man to know about all of that. What a wonderful attitude and outlook that Elisha had. Sometimes we can be a little like Naaman. People are seldom, if ever, neutral to the truth. And we can relate to having heard things that just rubbed us the wrong way. But deep down, we knew that we were hearing the truth. Let's make sure that we have our attitude in check. Let's make sure that we have that right heart so that we can do the works of God. Because we have to obey from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered to us. Romans 6, verse 17. And if you're not obeying from the heart, it's not going to profit you. Is your heart right with God? Washed in the crimson flood? Is your heart right with God? Humble and lowly. Right in the sight of God. We hope that you would respond in such a way so that heaven can be your home. If we can be of service toward that end, please heed the clarion call of the gospel. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. Come forward then while together we stand now and sing.